Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. after he's traveled the world over the holiday season, and he's now back. Welcome back, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Newell, and happy New Year to you. And hoping that the following 364, are quite different and better from the first.
Yeah, that was obviously a horrific circumstance. I know that you were kind of watching this unfold from afar. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I was over in Europe visiting my wife's family, and was actually at breakfast from New Year's Eve, not necessarily feeling my best, and got a phone call. It was 11 a.m. Europe time. From somebody, I won't say who, here in Louisiana. And I did the math in my head as the phone was ringing. I said, this is not good. This is 4 a.m., back home. So changed plans and came back. And I think what's become, apparent here, Newell, is that this was an ISIS-inspired terror attack on America, really. And we were just chosen because New Orleans embodies the humanity and the diversity of our country. And you only have to look at the pictures of the victims, which is really when this becomes personal, I think, and see what a cross-section it represents of America and of the world. So, it's for me, I was actually meant to fly out from JFK on 9/11. I was in New York, not New York City. But this is the first time I've felt that way since that event, that kind of feeling of violation, that feeling of shock. And I think what's going to happen is, in the same way that 9/11 changed everything for air travel, I think that this is going to change everything for the way we handle large events, which is, so much a part of our culture and our economy. I think that's to be determined. I think it's impossible to ever stop somebody who's willing to die to inflict mayhem. But there's no question that beginning with the Super Bowl and then Mardi Gras, we're going to see some pretty significant changes over the way we've done things in the past.
I have to assume that there's been meetings already with the NFL in the aftermath of this horrific event. What are you hearing?
So, yeah, there have been meetings with the NFL. I've not been in those meetings. I've just heard about them secondhand. But that apparently they are satisfied with the immediate response, satisfied with the plan. The biggest difference that's happened now that we can point to specifically is that the Super Bowl was already a Tier 1 event, which is the highest level. Now Mardi Gras is going to be at that level. I think what you're going to see is that the level of federal support and coordination, which was already going to be extensive for the Super Bowl, is just going to be that much greater. And, it's a difficult thing to telegraph, to say in the right way, but I think the truth of it is that after a horrific event like this, an attack like this, areas get so much attention. They're very safe. So we're going to have a very safe Super Bowl. And more than that, I think we're going to be able to show 150 plus million people in the world a New Orleans that looks better and brighter than they've seen in years. And so I think it's going to be a chance for us to demonstrate who and what we are as a city and as a community, and I think it's going to reflect on us very well.
You know, Michael, interestingly, I know the focus obviously is on the Super Bowl. We have playoff games starting this weekend. They're every bit as important and every bit as possible of being a target. We have playoff games for the national championship of the NCAA in Dallas and in forgot where the other one is. My mind just went blank. Obviously, challenges there. You know, I've said this from the very beginning. Pick a city, pick a state, pick a country. This could happen anywhere. It's really about the minimization of risk, but more so about being proactive in developing street-level intelligence, collection of intelligence information, dissemination of same, which is what I think we really need to do an after-action on to see where we're ultimately going to be. I agree and I applaud the mayor for procuring the SEER 1 designation. I think it was important. She's been trying since 2019. But I don't really believe that this is going to be rip up the whole plan, start afresh, and do things fundamentally different, because you can't eliminate risk.
That's right. I mean, it's the same debate we had after 9/11. You have to balance minimizing risk with allowing people freedoms in every mm-hmm. sense, right? Whether it's right. freedom of movement or freedom of communication. And there's going to be a balance that's struck here. And I do think it's important to remind people and remind the world that on a per capita basis, there's probably no place, maybe in the world, that is as successful an experience at hosting large events than New Orleans. We do this very well year after year, and we've been doing it very well year after year in difficult circumstances. And so I totally agree. I don't think this is a rip up the playbook. I think it's a refine the playbook, add a couple of chapters to it. But there is something that you just kind of alluded to that has been a theme that's been coming up in a number of conversations. And that is that I do think that it is time that we retire the word resilience. Not that we're not resilient. I think that New Orleanians and Louisianians define it going back hundreds of years. But I think it's not just that it's become a bit cliche, but it can become used as an excuse for lack of preparation.
It's all about competency. I mean, you know, I've said this from day one, probably while you're out of town. It's not about the bollards. It's about the execution.
That's right. And let me give you an example of where we've done this well. So, you know, after Katrina, we did an after action, and we basically discovered that the outfall canals had become infall canals. The idea that they would create these great vulnerabilities with our canals and the Mr. Go. And so what we did is we stopped them, we blocked them, we put up the $15 billion hurricane risk storm risk reduction system. And as a result, when subsequent storms have hit us, like Ida, we've had none of the surge damage, zero, that we had from Katrina. So we were able to use the words of General Honoré. We were able to move to the left side of the disaster curve. We were able to do things before the event. And I think it's important to remember that you're going to have natural phenomena that are really volatile. And you're going to have people who are sick, who are evil, who do try to do terrible things. With the right policies and, as you said, the right execution, damage from those events can be minimized. And so, it's all about thinking about what we do beforehand to minimize. We'll never get to zero because we wouldn't want to live in a zero risk society. It wouldn't be worth living.
Yeah, I mean, I think the classic example, you know this because you worked extensively with it, all of the floodgates that have been put in, right? They're great. I mean,
exactly.
You know, we're able to pass from point A to point B and inside the flood protection, back outside the flood protection. But if you don't close the gates, they're not worth the paper they're written on.
It's absolutely right, and you know, and there are other structural things. I think one of the things that's going to come out of all the post-action analysis is that all the finger pointing that inevitably is going to happen is going to indicate that there are far too many actors with far too diffuse responsibilities for a lot of our jurisdictions. And this is endemic to New Orleans. I mean, we saw it with Sewer and Water Board and DPW and drainage. We're going to have to figure out how to establish better single point of management and accountability in our tourist areas so that we can have better command and control. There are some structural issues here that have to be addressed, I think, if we're going to get better results in the future.
Very well said. A lot of road construction stuff going on. Let's move to that with the Super Bowl. 32 days to go. It is knocking on our door for certain. And got a lot accomplished, but still got a little ways to go, right?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that the Super Bowl effort is going forward unabated. We're getting a heck of a lot done. Things are getting done that we're not necessarily even expecting to have finished before the Super Bowl. Many roads have been repaired, blocks have been fixed. Completed streets include Perdido, Poydras, Girard, Charters, St. Anne, St. Peter. But now some road closures have begun related to the Super Bowl. And so I want to update the audience on what we're seeing today. All the roads surrounding the Superdome and the arena have now been closed for NFL load-in. Also, parts of Howard Avenue leading to the entrance to the Superdome campus has been closed off as well. Part of Howard is still closed by Plaza Tower, and we're working to get that reopened. Also, the Girard underpass between Dixon and Loyola is going to have a partial closure, so people should avoid that. You can find street-by-street updates coming to nolastreets.info. That's our website, nolastreets.info, that we are updating on a weekly basis.
Progress on murals as well.
The murals are fantastic. You can see a new one going up on Girard Street. The courthouse that I'm looking at right now is going to be absolutely gorgeous, particularly the panel that's catty-corner to Poydras and Loyola. There's going to be work starting down on the Marriott by a world-famous artist named Shepard Fairey of the Obey fame. There's going to be a mural going up on the ferry terminal. There's going to be one on the railroad trestle coming into town. And, of course, Plaza Tower is getting wraps and a Becky Foss. And so you're going to have these installations, as well as, of course, the 100 blocks of the French Quarter, with the exception of Bourbon Street, that we're going to preserve now. But you're going to have these murals and beautification elements that are going to last, you know, for a decade and are really going to brighten up the city and reflect our culture and our people. So we're thrilled to see these going up. It's very, very satisfying.
A lot going on, Michael, obviously up in D.C. as the lame duck president moves towards a transfer of power to Donald Trump. Congress recently passing a House Resolution 10545, the American Relief Act of 2025, that importantly keeps the NFIP afloat. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, it's a big omnibus bill that does a ton of things. It keeps NFIP afloat, which is fine. This is the 30-some-odd short-term extension. We still don't really have reform on NFIP. I have to tell you, Newell, that with the new administration, I am encouraged that we're going to be able to get the reforms on NFIP and risk rating 2.0 that we wanted, which are transparency, affordability, basically making it more responsive to the market. We kind of got stonewalled in the current administration from FEMA, and I think there'll be a change of attitude under the new administration. At the same time, we're continuing to work on writing on what I call NATCAT, which would be National All Hazards Insurance. This is the kind of shoot the moon idea, but it basically would take our current NFIP program and expand it to include hurricane, tornado, earthquake, fire, and you'd be pooling a lot more of the country in it, therefore spreading the risk and thereby making the program more viable. So we're working with some experts and would hope to get that run next fall, even as we're trying to reform the current NFIP program.
And Michael, in our remaining time that we have, let's talk briefly about what you think are maybe like the top three successes of 2024.
Oh, man, the top three successes of 2024. Well, I think what we're going to first of all see is the Super Bowl, which really was a 2024 effort, happening in 2025, is going to be a success not just for the game, but for the community and the city for a long time after. The second, I'd have to say what's happened in law enforcement, Noel. We're going to end the year with a homicide rate that is slightly under 50% down from 2 years ago. Carjacking's down 70%. I think that's a tremendous win for the entire community. And then I got to give plaudits, I think, Newell, for the tax reform that the governor and the team were able to get through. It wasn't everything, but it was a step in the direction. It's not perfect, but I do applaud the governor for having the courage, frankly, to take on this really difficult issue and to make some intermediate progress. Do I get a bonus? I'm sorry. You don't like that answer anyway. Okay. You hate that answer. Forget that answer. I'm going to say the Meta announcement up in Northwest Louisiana, Louisiana.
Huge.
That is, it's their biggest data center ever. And what it means is that it's not this big for that area, which desperately needs it. It means that Louisiana is not going to miss the AI wave like we missed the automotive wave.
Whew. Absolutely. Well, I wanted to have some fun by limiting you to three because I know that there's many, many more, right?
Yeah. Many, many, many more. But you got to shut down the monologue.
Absolutely. I did want to ask you, and now my mind just went totally blank. Oh, getting a lot of texts, lighting in the French Quarter, lighting on the interstate. We are convinced that that's going to happen before the Super Bowl.
So lighting in the French Quarter, 100%, because we're managing the contractor for that. I can give some detail on this, interestingly. There was a problem with some of the parts that were needed for the old lampposts, so we found somebody local who's recasting them. But I'm very confident about the French Quarter lights, street signs. Of course, you've got Sidney Torres now giving it the lemon fresh smell. So the quarter is going to be, I think, looking and feeling really good. On the interstate, we talked about that extensively this morning. Those are all scheduled to be fixed. There is an outage right now, I think, on the Pontchartrain Expressway that we're looking at. But it's absolutely one of our focus items, and we're doing a drive-through, I think, tomorrow night to see what's remaining out. So it's a high-priority item, and I think that they're going to get fixed.
Yeah, that Pontchartrain Expressway section, I get a text about it almost every day.
So we were and we were talking about it this morning. It was top of the agenda from Joe Threat and the team.
Yeah. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of G&O Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. So, folks, the whole reason that Michael Heck wanted a bonus answer, or in golf terms, a mulligan, is because he probably received the same presser that I just received that said that Business Facilities Magazine has recognized that investment of Meta in Northeast Louisiana, giving it a platinum award. The first ever received in Louisiana. Business Facilities Magazine, a respected national trade publication, favored by site selectors for large businesses, gave that designation. So it's the 2024 deal of the year, $10 billion Meta Artificial Intelligence Data Center.
Yeah, right? No, it's a big deal in the inside world that we are to get the platinum shovel, because it means that you're being recognized as the number one deal in the country for the year.
Absolutely. First ever. So that's
first
great
ever,
news.
Yeah.
Michael, we have some special guests. We have some special guests joining us.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled that we have the Chancellor of River Parishes Community College, Quentin Taylor, joining us. RPCC is one of the fantastic LTCTS schools that we work with on a daily basis. They're the lifeblood of the economy. And more kids and adults are going to our two-year schools because they're just great value. You get a two-year degree or a certificate and go out and you make a lot of money. So I'm glad he's on to talk about a contribution that they're getting to support programs in the energy sector.
And I think we're also joined by Dr. Donovan Thompson, who is the Dean of Energy Science and the Executive Director of EPIC as well. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having us on.
So, okay, I'm trying to figure out who I got. Okay, so Quentin, as a chancellor at River Parish's local company, Air Products, global leader in industrial gases, makes a transformative donation to the River Parish's community college. Tell us about it and tell us how do you envision actually impacting the community with this donation?
Yeah, so thanks, Norman and Mike. Good to be on. I'm sorry, not Norman. Noel. Thank you so much, Noel and Mike. Good to be on with you. I was disconnected there for a minute. This is Quentin Taylor with RPCC. Right. Thanks for that glowing introduction, Mike. So it is an unprecedented time, and Mike knows this, and I heard you all talking about the previous announcement up in North Louisiana with Meta. Louisiana is experiencing unbelievable growth, specifically in this energy transition or transformation, as we try to address the workforce needs of today as well as those of the future and tomorrow. And so in doing some of this work, we've been talking with Air Products, and obviously Air Products, they've got a facility going up right down the street here at our Gonzales campus. And we began to talk about how do we do more to include people who historically have not been a part of these kinds of opportunities. How do we make sure that we increase the workforce participation rate? And then how do we make sure that we reach back and begin to engage young people as early as possible so that when it's time to make a decision for their careers and their education, they are well informed? And so this contribution touches all three of those different points, right? So they're helping us with the setup and creation of our EPIC E3 Academy. E3 essentially is our starting in third grade. We're going to be starting in Donaldsonville and in Sorrento at the two primary schools. It'll be an after-school program where we hope to expose, engage, and ultimately employ students, again, starting in third grade, introducing them to the litany of careers in industry. Everything from operators and maintenance to finance to HR to communications and et cetera. And then it's an after school program, 2 hours a week over the course of a full year. And then there'll be capstones engaged in this process as well. So third grade to fourth grade to fifth grade, as they matriculate, they become more and more involved and understand what the opportunities are in their communities. That is the EPIC E3 Academy that we're doing in partnership with Ascension Parish Schools and their board and their awesome teachers. The other piece is our Manufacturing Day event, where we invite hundreds of middle school children from across the region, St. James, St. John, and Ascension Parish and St. Charles, where they have an opportunity to engage in hands-on experiences in the manufacturing sector, again, wanting to challenge their minds and expose them to the different career opportunities in advanced manufacturing and energy. And then the third piece of what they're supporting, and we just did the press announcement yesterday, is an expungement event for the residents of St. John Parish, right? So what we know is there are people who made mistakes in life, and they just need an opportunity to get back on the runway to get a career. And so we've got this expungement event that's happening on February 1st from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at our reserve campus in St. John the Baptist, where Southern University Law Center, along with Air Products and Under Industry, will be present to help expunge records, but then also connect these individuals to training opportunities at RPCC, and then also connect them to industry that are actively looking for individuals to come into the workforce to earn a really solid living to take care of themselves and their family. So that was a lot. We're really excited about it and just really grateful for our partners, Air Products. It was a $280,000 contribution to support those three different programs. But then we also have other industry partners who are stepping up and being present and being intentional to help us with this movement.
Chancellor, I got to imagine at some point they identified that just a lot of people don't really know not only about the educational opportunities, but the work opportunities in these particular industries, right?
No, absolutely, right? So, you know the saying, people don't know what they don't know. And I understand, and we all know why you've got these huge fence lines around these facilities, right? It's for safety reasons, but folks have no idea what happens behind the fence line. And so industry is being intentional with us to, again, expose folks to understand that you can earn a really, really good living, right, in your community with the requisite skills to get a job. And oftentimes it does not require a 4-year degree, or even in some instances, a 2-year associate's degree. Mike, you said it at the top of the, when you introduced us, that you can get some really good paying jobs with short-term certifications. And so it's our job to expose and make people aware of the various opportunities and to erase the stigma that's been associated with such jobs for far too long.
Do we have Dr. Donovan Thompson with us?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson, I'd like to give you the opportunity to talk about, you're the executive director of EPIC. And I know that we talked about the lower school, middle school. I got to imagine at some point in time as they matriculate up, y'all have a desire to continue this type of education and exposure through the high school years as well.
Yes, correct. So like Chancellor Taylor stated, right, the E3 Academy is more so focused on the primary school component of our K through 12 trajectory. But we also are focused on, like you said, high schools. So we do have a BASF Tech Academy that focuses on 11th and 12th graders, where they essentially do what Chancellor Taylor have already described that the elementary school students will do. They will get exposed to hands-on demonstrations. They will get exposed to different careers. It's a jam-packed summer camp where we take the students to various employers throughout our industrial value chain to expose them to various careers as an instrumentation technician, an electrician, an operator, process engineer, and et cetera. But we also do that same type of exposure for our college students, right? So we want to, you know, touch all types of students, the primary level, right, the high school and our college students, to where we have begun inviting some of those industry partners into our classroom as guest speakers. And they have been inviting us on their sites to do site visits to really become more intimate as to what goes on beyond those fence lines and the type of careers one could matriculate into once they finish a degree at River Parish's Community College. In addition to the fact, the consortium has allowed our industry partners to act as an advisory board to do a lot of equipment donation, industry-based scenarios as a skill set training demonstration, all of those different intimate efforts to really decrease the gap between us and them.
And obviously, there's a method to the madness of industry, right? I mean, it's hard to hire people. It's hard to find people. A lot of folks have a number of openings. It's very costly to recruit folks. What successes have y'all had thus far?
Right. So, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Thompson. No, go ahead.
No. So what, in terms of success, we've had a lot of success as to asking our industry partners to support us in internships, right? That's direct and indirect recruitment efforts, right? Because
Absolutely.
When they allow some of our students to become interns, they're also indirectly interviewing them for full-time jobs, right? So that has increased our successes. In addition to the fact, some of those same industry partners have become really, really intimate as to our career success. So participating in mock interviews, coming into the classroom, assisting us with situational type of cases of what a student should and should not say during an interview. Again, another indirect way of interviewing those potential candidates for full-time jobs. I'll stop right there so Chancellor Taylor can add a little bit more to that.
Go ahead, Chancellor, very quickly, please.
Yeah, no. So I echo Donovan's sentiments. That's what I was going to talk about, internships, externships, and the like. And then I think what's also been very helpful is having industry now have their employees come and serve as instructors, right? So we're piloting something this spring where one of our industry partners, and I don't want to say their name because I don't know if we've talked about publicizing this or not, but where they're going to allow their employees relief time, I believe four instructors who are employees who will be on our campus teaching in our classroom pedagogy knowledge and what's happening on site. That's a game changer. And we think that's going to help to improve that success rate of, to your point of onboarding employees and them not being ready, right? How do we make sure that when a student leaves here, she or he is ready to work on day one and does not have to be remediated when they get on that site?
I love that marriage of both with the experiential learning and the industry coming into the classroom. I think that's a path to huge successes. Congratulations to both of y'all, and thank you so much for joining us today. And we thank the largesse of Air Products and their commitment to the River Parishes Community College. Great work, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. And real quick, I got to shout out Mike and the team and GNO Inc., tremendous partners, not just for RPCC, but for all of higher education in Louisiana. Mike, we appreciate your partnership. Thank you so much. And thank you, Noel, for
thank
having
you,
us
Quentin.
On.
Just send me your Venmo number. I got you. Thanks.
You got it, brother. Take care.
Thank There's you, always a transaction, Dean, or Chancellor. I mean.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oquinard Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, there's a Louisiana Fuel Super Pitch competition. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so FUEL is the clever acronym for Future Use of Energy in Louisiana, which is a program launched by LSU with GNO Inc. as a partner as a result of winning a big $160 million grant from the National Science Foundation. Anyway, they're going to have a super pitch competition for companies in the energy innovation space. The winner is going to win $100,000 of non-dilutive capital, and then second and third will also get money, $50,000 and $25,000. So if businesses are in the energy innovation space, they should check out fuellouisiana.org/superpitch, fuellouisiana.org/superpitch, and they should give it a shot.
And this takes place where and when? Do you know?
This is going to happen in up at LSU, and the date is, I think it's going to happen in later this month, actually. I'm looking at it right now. Yep, later this month, yep.
And another New Orleans-based HR tech startup called Clio.
Yeah, so Clio is a company, is a product that's launched by a It basically deals with two things that I don't really like, which are cantaloupes and HR. And no, hold on. There's a point to all of this.
Oh, there's a point?
There's a point. So cantaloupe is the name of the local company, and HR is something that we all have to do and generally do a bad job of. And what Clio does specifically is the initial interview process. And so, you know, my problem with interviews, Noel, is that I'm a pleaser. And so I consider an interview successful if I get the person to laugh at my jokes. That you can imagine that, right? It doesn't make me an effective interviewer. Right? No, they're total psychopaths who will laugh at my jokes, right? In fact, that's generally how
it's happening right now.
Bingo. So what Clio does, it's a new product from Cantaloupe AI. It does a AI pre-screen of applicants so that by the time you're actually spending your time and spending an hour meeting with them, they've already been pre-screened, specifically in the hospitality industry, which is where you've got huge turnover. It's really hard to hire well. So this is a tool to help you interview more people faster and hire better. And as a recovering restaurateur, I wish I had this, 25 years ago.
No, absolutely, for sure. And they are launching this later this month here, right, in New Orleans?
That's right, yeah. It's a New Orleans company, and they're going to be launching it later this month.
All right. Sounds interesting. We'd love to see that product, actually.
You can go and check it out at trycantaloupe.com. And if you want this special offer, just click on the link that says prosciutto.
Prosciutto.
No, I made that up. Trycantaloupe.com is their website.
All righty. We have come to an end, Michael Heck. Thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it, and have a great week.
Thank you, Newell, and I'm wishing you a safe and prosperous year.
The same to you, my friend. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Walt Leger, president and CEO of New Orleans and Company. We will talk about a number of different things. And also, we have a special guest, Ralph Brennan, owner of the world-renowned Brennan's Restaurant on Royal Street in the Quarter. We'll get Ralph's perspective on protecting the French Quarter while preserving the enchantment and joy of the Vieux Carré experience. And we'll also talk about the restaurant's promotion to help victims of the terror attack.